Welcome to Red Alert Radio. Grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry tuku inga, ko Puke Tāpapa, Puke Wiwi, te maunga, ko te aonga, te awa, ko manakau, te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, katoa. Kia ora, my name is Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tāpapa Local Board and one of five Rossville Community Voice Reps on that board of Auckland Council. I'm also part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau, and I have a regular spot on Red Alert Radio. I'm really keen to get your feedback. You can find me pretty easily on social media once you work out how to spell my name. I'm on both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. That's spelt F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. And we also have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. If you search for Red Alert Radio AKL, you should find us. We put up links there from time to time. We're a little bit behind at this time of the year, as you might expect. But if you follow along there, hopefully we'll be really getting it going in the new year. Now, over the last year or so I've been doing my show, I've talked with lots of different local board members and community types from different parts of Auckland. You can hear those interviews online at planetaudio.org.nz. Just look for Red Alert Radio under R in the programs list. And there's heaps of other interviews there from my colleagues who also helped to host the show. Some really interesting stuff. We're going to be playing a few best-ofs over the January break, so hopefully that'll be worth tuning in to. Now today I'm talking with Carol Beaumont, who has many hats, past and present, and she's talking to me today as the Auckland Branch President for the National Council of Women NZ. Now in a former life, Carol interviewed me for Red Alert Radio when I wore that hat, so this is a nice chance to turn the tables. Look out, Carol. Here we come. So the National Council of Women NZ has been around since 1896, or started by many of those involved in the suffrage movement, to further the political interests of women in an environment that was still very hostile to women's voices. Some would say we're still very hostile to women's voices today. We'll talk a bit about that. Despite winning the vote for women in 1893. So they'd sort of thought, we'll win the vote and that'll do the trick. But actually they quite quickly found that that wasn't the case, and they started the National Council of Women. So over 120 years later, the National Council of Women NZ of today is quite a different beast from that that Kate Sheppard led back in the 1890s, and it's recently been undergoing another transformation, which I'm going to ask Carol a bit about shortly. Carol herself has been a Member of Parliament, a union leader, and for many years a staunch campaigner for women's rights. In her day job, she works with the New Zealand Nurses Association, not the Nurses Association, the Nurses Association, and is also very involved with UN Women and lots of other interesting stuff too. But today we're going to focus on National Council of Women. Thanks for joining us, Carol. Great to have you here.
Tēnā koe, Julie. I'm really looking forward to this interview.
Great. Now, first up, how do you describe National Council of Women to people? I know it used to have a reputation as being very conservative, quite sort of staid. Is that still accurate in your view?
No, I don't think it is. I think National Council of Women is an organisation that's going through some pretty fundamental change at the moment. But irrespective of that, I describe National Council of Women as one of the longest community organisations in the country, really. We've got a long and proud history. And, you know, yes, I think it has potentially had quite a conservative image in the past. And, you know, like a lot of organisations, has started to perhaps dwindle in its strength of recent times as people find different ways to engage and contribute. But I think we're on the case in terms of trying to turn that round. And here in Auckland, of course, you were part of doing exactly that.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience, actually. So the I mean, one of the things I often think about with National Council of Women is it started out as a radical organisation and in some ways was seen for a little while there as being sort of a more representative of the views of probably older women, particularly white women, maybe more rural than urban, those kinds of things. So why did you decide to get involved with National Council of Women in the first place?
Well, I've had quite a lot of experience with the NCW over the years, and initially at least it was more in my roles that I was engaging with National Council of Women rather than directly being actively involved myself. So yeah. They were a go-to organisation, partly I think because of the view that they were seen as having quite a wide-ranging perspective on things, and I think it still remains a strength of NCW that it is a very diverse organisation made up of many other organisations, some of which have completely contrary views, and yet somehow NCW manages to convey quite a strong position around what is good for women. So in my past life with the Council of Trade Unions, I dealt with NCW around issues like equal pay. Then when I was a Member of Parliament, I kept in touch. I was Labor's Women's Affairs spokesperson, and so felt that they were an important organisation to engage with and participated in many of the activities of NCW, like election forums and so on. And then I decided I wanted to, you know, be part of the Auckland branch, well led by Julie Ferry.
Keep going.
to really be part of saying there is a real role for an organisation like NCW that has both a lot of history, but also that really wide-ranging representation, and that there's some strength in that that I wanted to see really, I guess, both adapted to a more modern environment, but also continue.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the roles that National Council of Women has played over the, particularly well over the last probably 20 or 30 years, has been making submissions to Parliament. They've got a good reputation with members of Parliament, with select committees, for making really useful submissions, and yet that's something that's been completely invisible to the public, and often even to members of the National Council of Women themselves and the organisations that join. And so it's really interesting to hear from your perspective, having been on both sides, you know, having been a Member of Parliament and received submissions, but also having been someone helping to get those submissions in, the value.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's actually interesting. I did an exercise a while ago where I looked through the, we've got a remit book of all of the remits that National Council of Women have ever passed. And the interesting thing is that NCW, you know, while it's convenient sometimes to put that conservative tag on it, when you look at actually the remits that the organisation has had on its books, it has been ahead of its time in many, many areas. And the one I was looking at particularly was around equal pay and pay equity. And the first remit was very early on. In fact, it's one of the kind of outstanding issues, if you like, from when Kate Sheppard set up NCW, is actually getting true pay equality for women. But, you know, very early on in the 1950s, I think it was, NCW was actually putting forward remits that were not only talking about equal pay for the same job, but equal pay for work of comparable value, which the pay equity kind of idea has been one that's probably generally in the public mind been a much more recent phenomena, but NCW were onto that early on and promoting those kind of ideas, and those remits translate into the positions that the National Council of Women takes in submissions and in other lobbying, and I think that it's from my perspective it's part of our current role that I want us to see us continue strongly. But maybe be better at telling people about what we're saying.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I have seen improve, particularly with the use of social media. And how do people get involved in the National Council of Women? I mean, we've just mentioned social media, and it's really good to see National Council of Women increasing its presence on social media. How can you know, the ordinary person in the street find out what's going on and get involved if they want to?
Well, one of the good things is there's a whole variety of ways. Actually, interestingly, in the past it was, you know, attend a branch meeting and you had to formally join and then go to branch meetings. That's really changed, and from the point of view of the Auckland branch, I mean, we welcome people to come along to our meetings, obviously, but we're also working in collaboration with a wide range of other organisations on particular activities. So, like, for example, the Pay and Employment Equity Coalition in Auckland, and so our events are a way of participating and finding out more about what we're saying. But within the organisation, we have an Auckland Facebook page, there's a national Facebook page, there's quite a useful website, which is NCWNZ, and also more recently, the Gender Equal New Zealand social media campaign, which I'm sure we'll come back to. But people can participate in all of those without formally joining, or if people want to join, of course, and they would be very welcome, they can join our branch, they can join in an online capacity and not go to any meetings, and for some people that's a very attractive proposition. They can join nationally. So we're really working on making sure that the organisation is accessible and open. The last thing I'd say is that many organisations are members of National Council of Women, and we're trying to improve the way that we actually engage with those member organisations, because the people who perhaps represent them come along to events and meetings, but sometimes I don't think that the wider membership of those organisations necessarily know that connection or know what we're doing. So working with our member organisations more directly and actively is also part of how we can reach out.
Great. So you mentioned Auckland, the branch, folks, I'm a little under the weather today. So what is Auckland branch's role in the national organisation? How does that work for you as an Auckland branch president?
So National Council of Women has had branches up and down the country. Of recent years, some of those physical branches have actually ceased to exist, but Auckland branch is perhaps one of the more dynamic and growing branches in the organisation. We're the largest, which you would expect in the largest city in the country. And probably, you know, we've been working very actively on making sure that we engage broadly in the community in Auckland, and that we, that the people participating in the branch are more representative of the population of Auckland, which is younger, more ethnically diverse, all of those sorts of things. So we see an important role in promoting those that kind of approach. We've also tended to be a branch that's been very proactive within the organisation in putting up discussion items or remits on different issues, and perhaps, you know, pushing the boundaries a bit. So, you know, we did things like put up a remit on the living wage within the National Council of Women. This year around consent education being an important part of the compulsory school curriculum from primary through to secondary school. So we see ourselves as perhaps hopefully a quite a progressive voice and a very active voice. And our big challenge, and I think we're successfully starting to reap the benefits from this, is to engage very broadly with other organisations in Auckland and build alliances and be part of networks.
Great. And so what, and I'm aware that the National Council of Women has a national role where the national office and the national organisation talk directly to MPs and government agencies and stuff. So what does that look like at the Auckland branch level in terms of the involvement there?
Right. So we work with other Auckland-based organisations. So like this year, for example, we're actively part of the Pay and Employment Equity Coalition, as I said, and we were part of organising the march and rally that took place before the election, which had a really good turnout.
Yep.
We do things on the ground. Like we've tried to focus very much on young women, and getting more young women engaged. And there's certainly a very receptive audience out there. I think it's exciting, just how much interest in feminism there is among young women. But so, for example, we have a speech competition in secondary schools. Earlier this year, we had a community conference which really focused on issues like environmental issues, on activism and other things. And when I looked around the room, there was a very good portion of the participants in that were younger women. So we do things like that, which we drove ourselves. And then more recently with others, with the YWCA, with the Auckland Women's Centre, we put on a young feminist hui just a couple of weekends ago, which was targeting high school feminist groups. And that was really exciting. So that's kind of what it looks like on the ground, being involved in activities either under our own banner or jointly with other people, trying to reach out, trying to have some debate, trying to provide some ideas and support for others. And trying to get the message out that there's still a whole lot that needs to be done.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's interesting what you mentioned about the interest from younger women. Listeners obviously can't see this, but I'm wearing a shirt that has the word feminist on it. And I was wearing it yesterday, the day before, in a pet store. And one of the shop assistants, young woman, came up to me and started talking to me on the basis of the fact that my top had feminist written on it, and told me about her top that has feminist that she obviously wasn't wearing because she's in her uniform. And then when I went out to pay, one of the other young women who worked there was also like, I really like your shirt, and you know, feminism's really important to me too. And it was just like, wow, you know, when I was their age, outside of sort of my group of feminist friends at university, those kinds of conversations would have, you know, would not have happened, because it was very much a dirty word. And it's good to see it's fashionable, and it's sort of, how do we embed that, I guess. And so I was wondering a bit about the Gender Equal campaign, because to me, that focus for National Council of Women, shifting from sort of, I guess, it's really good that National Council of Women's become explicitly feminist. I think that's fantastic. And I think it always kind of has been, but it's really good to have that at the core of what it does and what it says. But now we've got this gender equality issue, which seems a little bit different. And I wondered if you maybe just want to talk a bit about, you know, the gender equality campaign that National Council of Women's doing, and why gender equality has been identified nationally as the biggest issue.
Sure. Can I just say, though, that the issue around feminism and the kind of interest, I think, is really, really exciting. And I'm a little older than you, and I considered myself a feminist at high school, but we were a kind of pretty small kind of group at that age, whereas now I think, you know, there's been almost a kind of renaissance or a convergence of events internationally as well that have really led to a very exciting time, I think, in our history as feminists, and the women's marches, all of those sorts of things, and I kind of think a real recognition that this is an issue, that's time has come and we need to actually sort this out. And that, I think, for me, is why the gender equal debate is a very interesting one. And I you know, think it's a really good way to perhaps look at how we progress our feminist cause effectively. So gender equal is really try and create a movement of people talking about what it would look like if, you know, so if you take away all of the artificial constructs, you take away the stereotypes, you take away the discrimination, what does it actually look like for all people to be able to do the things that they do well, the things that they're interested in doing, in a fair and equal way? And that's been quite interesting. And I think the concept is very much around trying to broaden the debate out into the community and say, look, you know, if you're a young man and you want to do this, well, why shouldn't you? And if you're a young woman and you want to do that, why shouldn't you? And what are the barriers that are in the way of that? And so I think it actually is a way of delivering actually on a feminist agenda, because I think in the end, trying to get broader understanding that if women, you know, are not facing huge, you know, violence daily, if they're not actually treated unfairly at work and paid less, you know, if they have a fair opportunity to be represented at every level in the society, we're actually all better off.
Yeah.
We're all better off if women are in those positions, because actually it frees up everybody and everybody can contribute to their potential. So that's what the gender equal thing is doing. And actually, really interestingly, a lot of people are really, you know, picking up on the kind of debates that it's feeding. So through social media, the gender equal platform is just asking really simple questions, you know. The current one, I think, is, you know, you have where are women in the media and women as presenters and so on. And, you know, if you're an older man, you're a silver fox. And if you're an older woman, well, you're too old to be actually fronting TV, you know, because you're not young and beautiful. How can that be right? You know, what's going on there? So to actually kind of trying to explore and explode, I think, some of those kind of stereotypes that are there.
Yeah, I'm just reading Tina Fey's book, Bossy Pantsy, at the moment, which for listeners has not dated very well in terms of some of the sexual politics. But I think it was written in about 2011. And one of the things that she mentions is at one point she's in an improv company, and they came up with a sketch that had two women in it. And one of the directors said, we can't do that. Nobody's interested in watching a sketch with two women in it. And they had companies that were four men and two women because they didn't have as many parts for women, even though they were writing it themselves. So even though it was improv. And she talks very fervently about that and about the change that has happened. You know, still not a great environment for women, obviously, but the change that has happened up to about 2011. And so it'd be really interesting to see what she thought now that she's a much more powerful person in comedy as well. But yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there is some momentum, but there's still quite a lot of change that needs to happen
It's a long journey.
It's been a long journey. And yeah. I think the thing that feels a bit exciting is there is a coincidence of events, I think, and a bit of momentum, I think, that actually is really positive.
Yeah. And it's funny to think that some of that has come out of the first woman to not get elected president when we all thought she was going to.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So taking it back to the local level again, from the mega international, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing women in Auckland? So, I mean, I think that gender equal stuff is fantastic, and one of the things I wanted to acknowledge about it is also that it's explicitly, gender equal implies that we're not just looking at a binary system in terms of gender, and I think that's great and it's really progressive. How do you see that in Auckland in terms of what would gender equality in Auckland look like, and what's the first thing you think we need to knock off?
Well, I think some of the barriers that face women everywhere face women in Auckland.
Yep.
That's the first thing. So those issues of violence, of unfair treatment and unfair pay, lack of representation. But explicitly, when you have women, for example, in low-paid work in the most expensive city in the country, then I think poverty is a real issue for women in Auckland. Some of those dynamics work together. You look at our council, for example, when you're talking about representation of women. Well, actually, it's not good enough. The number of women in our local government positions, and there's some very, good results in some of the local boards. And it's fantastic that women like you are in elected local government positions, because it makes a huge difference. But, when you look at our governing body, it's pretty appalling. And Kathy Casey did a very good piece on that. Things like, housing and housing costs, but also housing availability impacts on women, because still, single parent families are, overwhelmingly dominated by women leading those families, and trying to find somewhere for them and their kids to live is a problem in Auckland. Lack of public transport. Then you layer on that the low pay thing, and it's, harder to run a car, it's more expensive. So those are some of the things, and there's some interesting ideas about in relation to this. So Pacific Women's Watch, and we're wanting to work with them on this, are talking about looking at trying to get some buy-in in Auckland to Auckland becoming a CEDAW city.
Yeah.
Now, what that would mean is, and CEDAW is the Convention for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, which has a whole range of measures about some of the discrimination that does exist for women, running a ruler over that in terms of what does it look like in Auckland? What would Auckland look like if we didn't have gender discrimination as an issue? What would it mean in terms of urban design, for example, if you were designing a city that worked for young children? Now, that benefits men and women, obviously, but women still are primarily playing, the main carer role. So how would that benefit women? Significantly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What would it look like if we did have decent public transport that hooked people up to the places that they needed to be? What would it look like if we used urban design to make sure that our streets were safer?
Yeah.
Because still violence is an issue. And I mean, it's not all on the street. We all know that. But, making sure that people do feel comfortable walking around their city at any time of the day or night.
Yeah.
So I think that we've got an opportunity to really, I hope that our local body politicians would be interested in picking this idea up and saying, well, what does it look like for women in Auckland, and how could we make it better?
Yeah, and I think we are starting to get a little bit of momentum, but it's interesting because women are the one sort of more marginalised group in terms of representation who don't have an advisory panel to the mayor. There's one for disability, for the rainbow community, for youth, for older people, for Pacific people, for ethnic people outside the Pacific, and obviously there's Independent Māori Statutory Board as well. But there is no structure there for women. There was a whole lot of work done, particularly through the Auckland Women's Centre about 3 or 4 years ago, which was really valuable but hasn't really been followed through on. And it is interesting because there is a sort of a, the deputy mayor used to be a woman, and there's heaps of local board chairs who are women. We don't have a woman problem. But, yeah, my experience in the organisation is that's not the case, that there is, you know, we have the same challenges here just because there are women in some of the powerful roles. You just have to look at going for a run at night. You know, women in winter in most suburbs would not
feel safe
going for a run at night, whereas for most men it's something they don't even have to think about.
Totally. And can I say, you mentioned the Auckland Women's Centre, and I just want to say two things. You know, they've been very much part of that whole issue I'm talking about as well, as you say. But secondly, again, that's an issue for us in Auckland, the fact that the previous government, you know, ripped away funding from the Auckland Women's Centre, and it's a really hugely valuable resource for us here in Auckland. It's a generalist service, one of the few, where women can go to, and if they can't directly help them, they can put them in touch with somebody who can.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are meeting some of those really important needs for women leaving violent relationships, for women wanting to access learning opportunities, for women who just want to get some support, you know, as sole parents, for example. All of those generalist kind of things, and you know, they're overtly feminist, and they're really struggling for money.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things for them is that they are in premises where they're in a council building. And so, you know, there's a certain, and I'm not saying this because I know they're in danger of getting kicked out or anything like that, just to be clear, but there is a certain precariousness about that. And, you know, when leases are now going for 3 or 5 years at a time, it's difficult to know for sure, well, we'll definitely still be there and we'll still be in the same place. And for a service like that, for a generalist service like that, maintaining a physical presence in one location is actually really important so people can find you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to support the Auckland Women's Centre, I would really urge you to do so.
Yeah.
In whatever way you can.
Yeah, they're a great organisation. They do a lot of important work for women in Auckland. So we're almost out of time, but what would you call the biggest win for women in 2017, thinking back over the year?
Well, there's a whole bunch of wins, actually. The equal pay settlement for caregivers and aged care for me is hugely important. You know, having a Prime Minister and a Minister for Women who are feminists, that seems pretty big win for me. A paid parental leave being extended to 26 weeks.
Yep.
There are some that come to my mind. And this momentum that I was talking about earlier, the fact that there does feel like some real momentum. And some of the things that I would say were feel like losses are actually leading that, you know. So the fact that the ongoing sexual harassment of women is such a big issue, and yet it's created, again, part of that momentum. It's just out there that women are saying, actually, me too, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, that's right. And my mum told me once years ago that she'd never had a job where she hadn't been sexually harassed.
Gosh.
And that was when she was probably in her 50s. Since then, I should note, listeners, that she's had several jobs where she hasn't been sexually harassed, so that's good. And she's retired now in her 70s. But I remember her telling me that, and, you know, what a, as a young woman getting into the workforce, thinking, oh, gosh, that's going to be the future. But actually, I've worked in the union movement and predominantly in unions that have had high female membership. And so, fortunately, I haven't come across that. Unfortunately, I have had some in local government.
Yeah.
You know, things where you go, I'm not going to wear that top today because we're going to be leaning over a table looking at maps, and I know that so-and-so is going to be there and he's going to look down my top, and I don't really want to have to deal with that today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol, for your time today. It's been wonderful to talk to you, and I hope we can check back with you maybe in a year or so and see how it's going.
Well, it's our centenary next year, so we'd love to be interviewed about that.
Great. We will definitely make sure that happens, whether it's with me or someone else. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please check out our Facebook page, Red Alert Radio AKL. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite anō.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.